Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. The gun control debate is heating up once again, but Native America is usually left out of the national conversation. Debate about gun ownership is complex. How we think about guns has been shaped by our history, including a legacy of colonization. Some also say that modern-day gun violence on reservations should be part of the discussion. Where do you stand on gun control? Join us as we talk about gun ownership and gun control next on Native America Calling, right after National Native News.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Northern Ontario chief has ended her more than a month-long hunger strike and asks First Nations to stick together. Chief Teresa Spence ended it after the Assembly of First Nations and opposition parties agreed to take up her cause. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
After 44 days of living on fish broth and tea, the chief of the Attawapiskat Reserve had her first solid food after she was checked out by a doctor. She began her hunger strike with a demand that the Prime Minister and the Governor General agree to meet with her. She wants a new relationship between First Nations and Stephen Harper's government, and she wants Harper to honor existing treaties. Although there was no agreement from the government, pleas from other First Nations leaders and pressure from within her own community in Northern Ontario persuaded Spence to end her protest.
It's time to really stay together, no matter what hardship that we go through, and no matter what the government intends to do to us, to divide us.
Earlier, a spokesman for the chief said change had to happen, not only to protect treaty rights, but for all First Nations communities that live in third world conditions. And the main message was that the end of the hunger strike did not mean the end of the fight. Spence had become one of the main symbols of the Idle No More protest movement that has swept across Canada in recent weeks. The movement shows no sign of letting up as Native leaders demand the Harper government get rid of its omnibus legislation that they say threatens their treaty rights. Meanwhile, the head of the Assembly of First Nations says the Idle No More movement helped bring widespread attention to the long-standing struggles of Aboriginal people by piercing the consciousness of the country. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A Native American veteran supports ending the ban on women in combat roles. Julia Kelly is vice president of the Native American Women Warriors, an all-Native American Women Color Guard.
I thought it was about time. The policy itself was a little archaic. With Iraq and Afghanistan has changed in the way that the women have done their job and where they're positioned at and their roles that they play.
The Pentagon announced Thursday plans to lift the ban, which will open jobs. Opposition includes questioning the physical standards of women. Kelly, a 28-year Army veteran whose service includes tours in the Middle East, disagrees. She says women pull their own weight and there's no added risk to women when it comes to injury or death. And Kelly says changes in policy will help women in Indian country.
And Native women have always been our protectors. They have always been protectors with their children, with their elders. They've always been that way. So to me, the policy is just going to enhance that with Native women of how they're raised in protecting their family. So that kind of contradicts some of their, saying the men will, the women won't be able to, but I disagree with that.
The Crow woman says she was in tears hearing the news because women could be recognized and receive awards for their service in combat units. President Obama has shown support while some senators have voiced caution. The Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma is raising the salaries of more than 200 healthcare employees to better compete with urban areas. Nurse practitioners, physician assistants, doctors, and dentists will see an 11% pay increase by February 10th. It's part of the tribe's plan to improve healthcare quality and access. On this day in 1968, the U.S. Indian Claims Commission decreed that Mescalero Apaches in New Mexico should receive more than $8 million for lands taken from them in the 1800s. They declined because the money couldn't be shared with other Apache bands. A future ruling changed that. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. This is a court-ordered legal notice for Native Americans. The Cobell Indian Trust Settlement is approved. If you believe you might be included in the settlement, you need to file a claim by March 1, 2013 to get a payment. Information is available at the website indiantrust.com or by calling 1-800-961-6109. That's indiantrust.com or 1-800-961-6109. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is the Friday, January 25th edition of Native America Calling. I'm your host, Tara Gatewood. Today, we're talking about guns and the national debate going on right now about gun control. After the shooting last month at Sandy Hook Elementary in Connecticut, President Obama issued 23 executive actions on gun control, including an assault weapon ban, increasing efforts to address mental health issues, and focusing on safety in schools. So where does Native America fit into this conversation? The Second Amendment guarantees the right to keep and bear arms, but Native people weren't citizens when the Second Amendment was passed. And the Second Amendment may have been passed in part because of wars at the time with Native nations. So today, Native Americans, we know they're big-time gun owners, and they use them for hunting and, of course, personal safety. So what is the debate here? And on a national level, tribes can and do make laws about gun ownership on their reservations. But does that prevent gun violence? And will limiting guns solve the issues of gun violence? And what do you think about that? Where do you stand on gun control? We want to hear your voice. Join us in this discussion. Phone lines are open. Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848. And now joining us from Portland, Oregon, is Vince Reinhardt. And he is an activist, blogger, father, and gun owner. He recently wrote a blog post titled, "Our People Were Always Armed." And Vince is Tlingit. Welcome to Native America Calling, Vince.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great to have you on the line. And, you know, let's talk about what you shared in your blog. You start off by saying gun control is not for Native people. It is for people who can't or won't take on the sacred duty to protect their families, their people, their lands, and their way of life. You know, what experience in your life led you to take such a stance, Vince?
Well, first off, I grew up in Tlingit Ani, which is the traditional tribal territories of my people, the Tlingit tribe. But I'm also half Taos Pueblo Indian. And I lived there for a couple of years. And when I lived there, my grandfather took it upon himself to make sure that I was shown around in the community and was present for ceremonies. I was 13 at the time, and in addition to participating in dances and various activities there in Taos, he took me to a gathering of the tribe's warriors, and we brought our weapons with us to be inspected, and it was, my grandfather took me, it was fathers bringing sons, it was uncles with their nephews, to assess the tribe's ability to defend itself should the need arise. And, of course, at 13, that left a huge impression on me. And I have to just put it out there that I didn't grow up in Taos Pueblo, so I'm not as knowledgeable of that community. But from what I took from that and what I take from my tribe, the Tlingit, is that our sovereignty comes from a clan, a band, and a village level. And our tribes have always been here. They have always been armed. They've always been self-sufficient. And part of that self-sufficiency is security. So we've always been bands of people that have a volunteer force of warriors.
So you see this as a natural connection to our tribal communities. And of course, the pace was set for you as you were a teenager. And so now with that kind of foundation, Vince, when you look at the national debate, what do you think about it? Are you making sense of it, or are you seeing a lot of conflicts with that initial stance that you took as a 13-year-old?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of things going on in the national debate right now. And, you know, I try to think of how that applies to Indian country and our native communities. And to some degree, you know, we are subject to U.S. laws, so we should have a part in that debate. And, you know, I see this as security trade-offs. Sensible security does not result in fear. And right now the big topic is so-called assault rifles. But if you look at the 2011 statistics, rifles only accounted for 2.6% of murders. So I can't help but wonder, like, is this policy being driven by fear, or is this a calm, rational look at, you know, where does violence come from? It's not coming from rifles.
And, you know, that is definitely a critical question of, you know, where does the violence really come from? Is it the tool that is leading to the violence? What do you think about that, audience? Our phone lines are open. Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. And, you know, when we consider this, does your family own guns? Call us and tell us why you own a gun. Or do you refuse to own a gun? Call us and tell us why. And what about our history? Does that contribute to your views on guns and maybe even gun control? Again, the number, 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and bring in our first caller. We have Joseph, who is in Plaza, North Dakota, tuned in on KLND. Joseph, you're on air.
Hi, I'm Joe. I think Obama's going completely the wrong way with this whole thing. You know, people that have mental illnesses, I can see that, not having a gun. And I've been going hunting with my dad since I was 4 years old, shoot 22s, you name it. You know, my brother's state police up in Michigan. We've had guns our whole lives. You know, if somebody hasn't had a felony in 7 years, they should be able to have a gun. You know, instead of disarming a country, I think they should be arming up. And when some idiot comes running into a mall, four or five people draw down on him, they might think twice next time about something like that. You know, I think they're going completely the wrong way with this whole matter. You know, it's like they say, the Second Amendment is our right to have guns. We should be able to have guns, arm ourselves. Another country comes over here, we set up a fight, not call. Everybody start running, that's the wrong direction to go. That's about all I have to say about it.
Certainly. Thanks a lot, Joseph, there in North Dakota, tuned in on KLND. And we also want to hear from you. Phone lines are open. Let's go ahead and keep the phone lines rolling and bring in Dawn, who is in Mobridge, South Dakota, tuned in on KLND. Dawn, hello. Good morning. You're on air.
Good morning. How you doing?
We're doing good.
Well, I just wanted to say about the Second Amendment gun control. Yeah, I was in Vietnam. What they wanted us to do, walk around without a gun over there? You know, be free game to everybody that's there. And like I say, President Obama, I don't think he knows what he's talking about. You know, everybody should have the right to bear arms.
Okay.
Especially me. Like I say, after I left Vietnam, I ain't got a gun in my home for like 42 years. So how am I supposed to check myself when it comes to my house?
Good question, Don. Thanks for your call there in Mobridge, South Dakota, tuned in on KLND. And Vince, what do you think about that one, that last statement that Don left us with? You know, how am I supposed to protect my house without one? What are your thoughts, Vince?
I think that's a valid concern. And, you know, it's often brought up that having a gun in the home increased, you're more likely to have a family member hurt by that gun. But on an individual level, you know, it's the responsibility of a gun owner to take care of their weapon. My rifle is primarily, it's not really a home defense rifle, but I wouldn't deny anyone else the right to choose to have a weapon to defend themselves in their own home.
And so you think it's more of an individual decision that households should be making?
Yeah, and it's a community-level decision. You know, as you mentioned, tribes have the authority to create laws in their own communities, and I think that's probably where the level at which we need to be addressing issues around violence is at a community level.
Okay.
People who know their community should be making those decisions.
All right. And I want to thank Don for his call. Also, the other ones that we are starting to see the phone lines light up. And we want to hear from you, too. And we're hearing a lot of support for this and support in don't control my guns. But, you know, if you feel on the opposite side, we want to hear from you, too. And, you know, is there a moment where you feel like you're the only person who supports more gun control regulation? And why do you feel that way? Are you the only person in your family that doesn't own a gun? And why have you chosen this route to not own guns? We want to hear from everybody today. Our phone lines are open. Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and bring in another caller. We have CJ, who is on the Pine Ridge community there in South Dakota, tuned in on KILI. You're on air, CJ.
I want to... Thank you. This is a good subject matter that you're talking about with the Second Amendment and all. But I wanted to clarify, United States government and media putting out being Sandy Hook, being the largest shooting in American history, that is very false and untrue. We had in 1890 on our reservation, they killed our people. The United States government disarmed them and proceeded to kill 290 unarmed Indians. 200 women and children including. So I just kind of wanted to clarify that, and I'm a strong member of NRA myself, and I support the number two Constart Amendment, number two, you know, having the right to bear arms and defend ourselves, you know. And I think that would be up to the individuals, you know, and how to figure it out. I know that they're trying to come up with a lot of other stuff. One of the comments made was that the President of the United States, children go to a school where their security guards, their school resource officers are actually armed, you know, and then they don't allow it elsewhere in the United States. You know, there's a question and problem there.
Okay. Good comment, CJ. Thanks for your call there in KILI country. And Vince, what do you think about that? I've also heard that thrown out there that, you know, a lot of people support gun control or they don't want guns around. But at the same time, they want other people who carry those guns, like police officers or security guards, or maybe just even knowing that that one cousin you have, at least they have a gun. What about that kind of situation where they'll let someone else carry it just as long as it isn't in their own hands? What do you think about that one, Vince?
Well, I think it's quite a big hypocrisy that the U.S. defeated many of our tribes with violence and with guns, and now it turns around and tells us that violence and gun ownership isn't the answer and that we should pursue, you know, peaceful change through their institutions and government. And so when you're talking about gun control, you're asking someone with a gun to enforce those laws. You know, I hold the rather radical opinion that let's start with the federal government first. You know, maybe they should be as the previous caller brought up, they're the ones with a history of violence. Maybe they should be the ones to lead the way. You know, as far as, like, who do you decide in your community should and should not own a weapon? You know, in most of our tribes have a way of socializing young men, socializing young warriors, to be a part of that community, to be embraced and loved by that community, so that things like Sandy Hook don't occur. That's the responsibility is in the community to develop a strong sense of who they are, where they come from, promote that culture. And really, guns should just be one very small part of who we are and what our sovereignty is. It's just one very small piece of that puzzle.
Okay, let's go back to the phone lines. And again, we want to hear from you. You know, is there anybody out there who supports limits on guns? Or is that an opinion that just isn't allowed in Indian country? What do you think about that? 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and bring in Mario, who is in Porcupine, South Dakota, tuned in on KILI. Mario, you're on air.
Thank you. I strongly believe that, you know, Obama... On the gun control, he can further steps on doing investigations. Like if you're at a gun show or a pawn shop or anywhere they sell firearms, further steps can be taken, like a psychiatric test, or you know, further background investigations. I do believe in right to bear arms. I was raised with rifles in the residence, firearms in the residence, and I believe that if you purchase a gun, you should be, you can take, you know, like, you can further steps like gun safety. You can, like, take a gun safety class to purchase a firearm. I don't believe in banning firearms.
And Mario, if you don't believe in banning them, what about setting limitations? What do you think about that and some of the things that were put out on some of these bigger guns that are out there and putting regulations on them? What do you feel about that, Mario?
I feel that there shouldn't be any regulations. I mean, as long as you know how to use a firearm, if you're taught, you know, the safety features of a firearm, and if you can reiterate the nomenclature of that particular firearm, and like you take a firearm safety class, yeah, definitely. I mean, I believe that everybody in America, especially in Indian country, should have a right to bear arms.
Okay, Mario, thanks for your call there in Porcupine, South Dakota. Again, we want to hear from you, 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and bring in Coat, who is here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on Native Voice One. You're on air, Coat.
Oh, yes. I was just calling for some information about that I'm for guns. Yeah. In Native America, I think everybody should own a gun because we all learned our lesson. But I'm for guns. You know, my grandmother, she was shot by my grandfather 6 times at the 38, and she lived, and she still stayed with my grandfather, and my brother, he was killed with a gun, but I'm still for guns, you know. I have mine right in the shelf there, and I think if everybody had guns, then we'd have really real gun control. But that's all I'd like to say.
And when you say if everybody had a gun, we'd have more control. What's your thinking behind
that?
Mm-hmm. And how would that work?
Control. Oh, because everybody would have a gun, so they'd have to control their own guns, you know. And America is built on firearms, and government should acknowledge that we all need to protect ourselves when it comes down to it. At least that's what Sitting Bull wanted, you know, but he was mellow and said, oh, you guys, just kick back, you know, let these guys, they're going to disappear and get tired of us, but they never did. They stayed.
All right. Thanks for your call, Coat, here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Let's bring in another. We have Dawn, also in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. You're on air, Dawn.
Good morning. First, I want to say that I support the Second Amendment, and I do have a different view than a lot of the callers. You know, when I was 16, I went out and I got a driver's license, and I can drive a car, but it doesn't entitle me to drive a Sherman tank, you know, and there's people that are qualified to use assault rifles and drive Sherman tanks and such, and so I really think that there needs to be reason around getting kind of controls. I don't think that, you know, obviously Obama's daughters need to be a little bit more protected because they are the children of the leader of the free world. I mean, there are reasons why they're in private schools and such. So some of the arguments, to me, kind of take away from the real issue, which is, you know, we had a tragedy here, you know, recently with a family, with a 15-year-old that got a hold of guns that weren't locked up. And I think it really gets down to two things, you know, having laws that work for the community and then also having personal responsibility. I grew up in northern New Mexico. I grew up in a home that had guns. I personally don't own them. I just am not comfortable with them. I grew up along ground of hunters and that kind of thing, but I really don't think you need an assault, you know, rifle. And one thing that I want to say, too, is that I live by Montezuma Elementary in Albuquerque, and I came home night before last, and the federal government, one of my neighbors had, I guess it was under investigation, and it was taking all day long to remove all kinds of assault rifles from his garage. You know, the Homeland Security was there, the federal government was there, the sheriff's department was there, and, you know, I live in a middle-class neighborhood in Albuquerque, you know, and I asked the HFI guy, I said, so what's the limit on how many weapons I can have? And he said, you know, it wasn't just the weapons, it was other stuff. So I don't know what else was in that garage, but, you know, they already had two vans loaded. And so I just wanted to voice that opinion is that, you know, we have to have a regional dialogue with all of our communities. You know, our government is supposed to be here to help protect and put laws into place that work. And, you know, if someone can just go in and buy an assault, you know, rifle, or like with, you know, happened with Newtown, it was, you know, kid got the gun from his mom. You know, the answer isn't more guns. You know, I think you have to really look at what kind of guns you need. And if you need an assault weapon with, you know, a magazine of 100 rounds to protect a home, I think there's something more wrong with our society.
Okay, so, Don, thanks for your call here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Our phone lines are open. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848. You know, where do you stand on this? And, you know, how do you think decisions that are being made today affect our tribal communities? What do you think about that? And does your tribal community take a stance on these type of guns? And, you know, put their own rules and regulations? Or do you support your community because they don't put any regulations? Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Vince, a couple of things that our listeners brought up that I wanted to ask you about. We had a gentleman who called in and said if we had more guns, there might be a more control. And I want to hear your thought on that concept, that if, you know, everybody is packing a gun, then, you know, or there are people who think that it might regulate people or things like that. What are your thoughts on that, Vince?
Well, I think that today, in this day of age, the U.S. is an extremely diverse country. You know, there are 300 million people in this country right now, and they come from all different walks of life, different religions, different races. So when you're talking about urban communities versus rural communities, you're looking at, you know, very different situations. And to some degree, I agree with that caller, and to some degree, I don't. And what it really comes down to is what the previous caller was talking about, personal responsibility, which is how do you develop that culture of personal responsibility over firearm ownership? And who has the right to make that law for you, your community, on how you define what that responsibility is? You know, from what I took from the gathering in Taos was that it was the responsibility of the tribe at a very tribal level to show the young people, these are our weapons, this is how we handle them properly. We're going to bring our young men and show them that they can be manly men in the context of a community.
Right. And Vince, hold that thought. We're going to break here again. We want to hear from you. Our phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And it is the gun debate today here on Native America Calling. And, you know, also wondering, have we passed a point where we need to keep guns? And, you know, just in case, what do you think about that? 1-800-996-2848. We'll be right back after this short break. And reservations are typically isolated and far away from a decent grocery store. That can make it hard to get healthy food. How do you cope with long drives for food and other basics? Have you found a way to bring food to your community? Join us as we ask, how far do you have to go? On the next Native America Calling.
I think one of the most outrageous myths that's perpetrated even by Indigenous people today is that Indigenous people have been or should be pacifists.
They call me hostile, but what they don't understand is that it comes from the love that flows in the land. They're coming to take all I hold dear, but I stand, because my love is so much stronger than fear. Give me strength, give me courage, but don't give me no doubt. Hahi hadaksa, I'll be taking them out. They say white education has some kind of worth, so tell me why things have only changed for the worse. They say that blood hides the sacred from sight, so tell me why every warrior society followed a pipe. We need strength, we need love, but we need our anger to rise above this pain that we feel inside. Because almost everything we've ever been told was a lie.
The idea that in the 21st century or in today's society that we do not have a right to defend our people, our lands, our way of life is...
Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC-CLIC-GIVE when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. This is a court-ordered legal notice for Native Americans. The Cobell Indian Trust Settlement is approved. If you believe you might be included in the settlement, you need to file a claim by March 1, 2013 to get a payment. Information is available at the website indiantrust.com or by calling 1-800-961-6109. That's indiantrust.com or 1-800-961-6109.
We're back. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo. And before moving into our second half of the show, hello to our stations that carry our programming, like KBFT in Net Lake, Minnesota, KYUK in Bethel, Alaska, KSHI in Zuni, New Mexico, and hello to those of you who are streaming us live on Native Voice One. And today's hot topic is gun control, and we're wanting to know what you think. What kinds of limitations, if any, should we be putting on guns? And we're also thinking about in our states, and most importantly, on our reservations and in our villages, our Native communities. And recent shootings have brought to the surface an age-old conversation about gun control and ownership rights. And, you know, what about that history? Do you think that any of that helps us answer any of the questions that are going on today? And when we think about it, do fewer guns mean less violence? Or should the conversation be about other root causes of violence? Where do you stand on this debate? Do you own a gun, or do you try to keep away from guns? What do you think? 1-800-996-2848. And also want to encourage you, if you want to post your comments on Facebook or Twitter. We're also monitoring that today. If you catch busy phone lines and you still want to get your comment in there, that's another way you can do it. Just go to Facebook, Native America Calling, and also on Twitter, 1-800-99-NATIVE. And now back, bringing our guest who is joining us on the phone line, Mr. Vince Reinhardt, and he is Tlingit, also an activist, blogger, and gun owner. Welcome back, Vince.
Thank you.
And let's go back to the phone lines. We've got a lot of people who want to chat with us. Again, we want to hear from you, 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's bring in Helen, who's in Pocatello, Idaho, tuned in on KISU. You're on air, Helen.
Hi. I do want to add my voice to this discussion because it seems to me that there is a dead horse that everybody is beating on like crazy. The discussion should not be about the United States taking away people's guns in the sense that people need would fear that the one little pistol they got, they inherited from their grandfather, will be taken away, or the rifle they bought for $2,000 a couple of months ago will be taken away. That is not the discussion. The discussion from the government is about military-style weapons, like the types of machine guns and weapons that have clips with over 50 bullets in them. Now, how many people do own these to begin with, because they are extremely expensive? And if you need that kind of weapon for one reason or other, then who is your enemy? Is the government our enemy? Of course, Native people have felt that way for a long time, and rightfully so. But 200 years ago or 100 years ago, when Natives still were defending themselves against the army of the United States, they couldn't win because they didn't have enough people and they didn't have enough whatever they were using, whatever rifles they were using at the time. And right now, nobody in the government wants to take normal hunting guns away from anybody. And enough people have them, but they want to limit the accessibility to military-style weapons. And
okay, Helen, I hear you. I hear you on that. Let's hear what Vince has to say about this. Vince?
Well, I own what most people would probably call an assault rifle, but it's actually a semi-automatic battle rifle.
M1A, which is the civilian version of M14. It comes standard with a 20-round magazine, but I could get a 100-round magazine. Do I need it? I think that we've seen demonstrations in history, in our own people's history, the Plains Indians, on a number of occasions nearly rolled back the U.S. frontier, mostly using steel-tipped arrows on horseback. Right now, we're seeing the empire being rolled back on the other side of the world. And to be honest, you could do it with a bolt-action rifle. So do I need my M1A? I sure hope I never need my M1A. But I think a free people should always be prepared and willing to defend themselves. Otherwise, they will always be at someone else's mercy.
Okay. And Vince, what do you think about that other side of it? And we also had a caller say, you know, that the government can help protect our communities. Do you feel that it is the government who should be protecting them with guns? And what about that history as natives? How, you know, the intersection, the way those two things play together. Vince?
Well, I think it's our responsibility to protect our communities in whatever way we see fit. And I think we ought to have very strong alliances with our neighbors in order to ensure that. It's always been our own responsibility to provide security and safety for our own people. And I think that's probably what's lacking these days, is that tribal sense of identity. And, you know, firearms, that's a very small part of my life. I think that's a very small part of a holistic tribal life. And if you look at a community that has a sense of itself, that it brings its young people into the tribe and gives them a good place in the tribe, that's safety and security right there. I think that is probably what should be stressed above all else, even above guns, is bringing those young people into the community and showing them how to be responsible, caring, loving adults, love one another.
And Vince, do you feel that you're giving up your sovereignty when you give in to these type of regulations?
To some degree, yes, I do. It's just one front on many fronts that I think we're fighting. I do think that part of our sovereignty is tied to our ability to defend ourselves. But like I said, I could do it with my battle rifle. I could do it with a bolt-action hunting rifle. I can do it with a stick if I needed to. Depends on the will of our lawyers.
Okay, thanks, Vince. And you know, you bring up young people, and I want to throw this question out to the audience. Do you think that this debate changes when we're talking about guns in the hands of young people? What do you think? 1-800-996-2848. Let's bring in Mary, who's in Taos, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Mary, you're on air.
Hey, good morning. This is a really good show. The perspective that I would like to share is as a rural Western American, guns are tools. And no, I'm not necessarily talking about assault rifles, but my two brief examples are I've had little farms, milk goats and stuff, for many years when I was younger up here and then up by Alamosa, Colorado. And basically, a gun is a tool. When the bears come down from the mountains in the spring and the fall, you let your dogs out, they tree the bear, you shoot the .22 in the air twice, and you never get the same bear twice. The second example is one of my nephews was taking me over Poncha Pass to Salida, Colorado, to have dinner. And there was a deer that had been hit by the side of the road going up the pass. And because he had his gun with him and, like all good rural Western kids, had been trained properly in how to use a gun, we were able to put that deer out of her misery. She was completely paralyzed but couldn't move and scared to death. So I think we need to look at that perspective. And culturally, I agree with Vince. It's hard to explain to people. I lived in Europe for a while, and they never understood it. But as Americans, we all feel the need, or many of us feel the need to be allowed to have a gun, whether or not we do.
Okay, Mary, thanks a lot. There in Taos, New Mexico, let's bring in Richard in McLaughlin, South Dakota, tuned in on KLND. Richard, you're on air.
Yes, ma'am. I just wanted to say that I support the right to bear arms and the National Rifle Association. And I believe that if somebody wants to own a gun, that's up to them, because I always say it's better to have a gun and not need it than to need one and not have it. And besides that, you know, guns don't kill people. People kill people. And if the government needs to control this, you know, they need to do better background checks. They need to ask more questions about the type of gun they're buying, because there's a gun out there for everybody, I believe. So, I mean, and, you know, we should be able to protect ourselves in any way we can, you know, from harm of any kind. So, you know, what if the Cold War starts again and they took all our guns away? Then, you know, we can't step up and help out, you know. So it just don't make sense if they want to take them away or control it more. If it's about control, it's what it's all been about since the beginning, control.
Okay, Richard, thanks for your call in McLaughlin, South Dakota. Again, we want to hear from you, 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's move on over to Ignacio, Colorado, and bring in Lambert, who's tuned in on KSUT. Hello, Lambert.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're doing good.
Well, let's just set the BS aside right away. For one thing, they're not coming to take your guns. All they're doing is setting aside a standard for the military-style AR gun, which is meant for war. Nobody, you can own a gun. You can own any kind of gun. You just, these guns are often used in crimes by people who shouldn't own a gun. What we're forgetting here, the most important thing here, the most dangerous thing here, is the human mind. And if you require a weapon for protection, you must really consider one thing, why you need a weapon to protect yourself. Are you a person who puts yourself into trouble? Do you interact with crime? There's a whole lot of, you know, different questions here that, you know, criminals are the ones that we're worrying about. And these kids who killed all these family members and even in the school shooting, you know, they were mentally upset or, you know, just wrong in the head. But, you know, one thing is the assault rifle will go, if you have to do something with it, you put it in the same position that you would a silencer or any of those kind of type things, which you would do, then you would have to take your picture from the local sheriff. You would have to.
Right. And you know, you made a great statement. You know, let's get right to the point of what this is about. And it's not that guns are going to be taken away. It's these regulations and type of guns, and also taking a look at who owns a gun. Thanks for that call, Lambert. And we want to hear from you, too. What do you think about this? And again, I'd like to hear from somebody who's thinking about this. What about when these type of guns fall into young people's hands? A lot of people associate guns and these type of rifles with gang members. Is this something you're facing in your community? What do you think about that? 1-800-996-2848. Let's bring in Jeremiah, who is in Warm Springs, Oregon, tuned in on KWSO. You're on air, Jeremiah.
Hello. Hello, Indians everywhere. My opinion is that this is more of an accountability issue. The people that own these type of weapons need to be held responsible. They shouldn't be allowing these weapons to be easily grasped by young children or people who are mentally ill. Any of the gun violence that you look at usually is by somebody who shouldn't have ever touched one. This isn't a gun control issue. This is an accountability issue. It's all our responsibilities to make sure that these weapons do not end up in the wrong people's hands. I own plenty of the types of guns that were used in mass shootings and a lot of the violence around the nation, but they won't end up in the wrong person's hands because I keep them locked away in a safe, and I'm the only person with a key.
Okay, and Jeremiah, let me ask you, you know, who are the wrong people and who should have the right to say who is the wrong person?
Well, nobody should be able to tell anybody that they can't own a weapon unless if they're by law able to. The Second Amendment protects our right to keep them, own them, and have them. I mean, we as Indians kind of know all about why we should have them, but wrong people are people that would do harm for absolutely no reason or for their own personal reasons.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Jeremiah. And let's keep the phone lines rolling. Again, we want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's bring in Matt, who's here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. You're on air, Matt.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
All right. You're on air.
My concern is this. It's terrible, especially in light of the most recent shooting and everything. But it seems like every so often this comes up as part of the national debate, including 4 years ago after Obama's initial inauguration. The nation was freaking out about, you know, the gun control issue and the Second Amendment again. And next thing you know, basically, they can't keep the bullets on the shelves. And, you know, guns are selling out and all that kind of stuff. It seems to me to be more of a distraction issue as opposed to keeping us on track with some of the other more important issues, such as the economic policies that we need to set forth, all the environmental stuff that we need to be discussing. There are important issues that we could be discussing that I think that this is taking away from.
Okay. Thanks for your call here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Let's go ahead and take in another one. Let's bring in Shane, who's in Ring Thunder, South Dakota, tuned in on KOYA. Shane, you're on air.
Hello, good afternoon. I just wanted to make a quick point is that, you know, the law really only applies to those who respect it. And we see a lot of people who use and abuse the law and I guarantee that all of these who shot in the schools and the theaters had never even thought about what was going to happen afterwards as far as incarceration or wearing handcuffs or anything. So, you know, as I said, it only applies to those who respect it. And there are many people out there who are unbalanced and, you know, the society and drugs and alcohol, it creates that even if it's only for a little bit. So, It's such a deeper problem than the actual guns themselves or even the availability. But if I had the money to purchase an assault rifle, I would use that same money to buy a really good hunting rifle instead so that we can use it to provide for our families, you know, deer meat and our pheasant and grouse and turkey. But this is a... this is kind of a sillier point, I suppose. We need to combat it as hard as we are. The actual reasons, the alcohol, the drugs and things that are going on need to be addressed through the people, not what's out there. Look at all the people who drink and drive. We are more at a threat. Anybody that drinks and drives can go out there and eliminate a whole family in a car in a fraction of a second.
Okay, thanks a lot, Shane. There in Ring Thunder, South Dakota, tuned in on KYA. Let's bring in another. We have Carlos, also in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. You're on air, Carlos.
Hi, good afternoon. I just wanted to kind of touch on the point that, you know, one of the ladies had said that the guns are tools, and I totally believe that. I have two small children, and I've taught them both how to use a gun, and we go hunting all the time, and we use guns safely, and both of my children, I feel, are safer with a gun, and I would trust them environment where they had a gun more so than a lot of adults I know. You know, it's like anything. If I want my kids to be able to use that tool, I need to be able to teach them how to use that tool before they have to use that tool. And I kind of feel that, you know, the amount of guns that are out there right now, if somebody who wants to do bad wants a gun, they're going to be able to find a gun. You know, it's more about the people using the guns and how they're using the guns and how they've been taught and the responsibility and you know, how they feel about the fellow members of society. I think there's way more than just the control aspect that needs to be addressed, because guns aren't bad. It's the people who are shooting other people that are the bad ones.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Carlos, there in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Let's bring in Seth, who is in Fort Hall, Idaho, tuned in on KISU. Seth, you're on air.
Hey, how's it going, Tara?
Doing good.
Those adolescents that go to school, you know, they want to arm the teachers. You know, the teachers, you know, might have humiliated that little person, and you know, in front of the whole classroom, and you know, that little person might have been weak-minded, and, you know, and to, you know, go back and know where his dad's gun is and know where the bullets are. You know, I grew up playing, you know, cops and robbers and cowboys and Indians and armies and, you know, so, you know, sword fighters, you know, when I was a kid, you know, but now they have these video games and, you know, you could, you know, they have, you know, these powerful grenade launcher guns, you know, that, you know, catapult, you know, explosions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Seth, thanks for your call there in Fort Hall. And Vince, I wanted to ask you a question. You know, if the debate is not about should or shouldn't we have guns, but the type of guns, have you thought about this, or have you read anywhere or seen people put it out there that perhaps the whole regulation is the government doesn't want the public to have guns that are bigger than theirs? What do you think about that, Vince?
I think there's some truth to that, because if you look at the homicide rates and what weapons are being used to commit homicides, it's handguns. Handguns are nearly 50% of murders are committed with handguns. So, and again, I just have to go back to sensible security does not result from fear. Less than 3% of murders in 2011 were the result were rifles. Rifles were used in less than 3% of murders in 2011. So are we, this whole debate and, you know, these shootings, which they're awful, I agree, they're torn up about them. I couldn't even read about them for like weeks after the Sandy Hook occurred. But are we responding to the wrong threat here? The whole debate reminds me about the debate around security and terrorism, which is you have these very rare, very spectacular outbursts of violence, and politicians cannot afford to not respond to those, even if the risks in dying from terrorism and dying from a mass shooting are extraordinarily small. They simply, in today's day and age, with politics the way it is, a politician cannot afford to not respond to these sort of events. And now we're targeting assault rifles or semi-automatic rifles is what we're really, really targeting. But like I said, less than 3% of murders in 2011 were rifles were used in less than 3% of murders in 2011. Right. So why are we talking about rifles?
Okay, good point, Vince. Let's bring in another caller before the hour's up. Let's bring in Ron, who is in Toppenish, Washington, tuned in on KYNR. Ron, you're on air.
Thanks, Tara. Quickly, I guess they said, with all due respect to your guest there, I think, you know, when he mentions only 3% or whatever, you know, to me, that's still a lot of lives. And I think in those lives, you're including the ones that, you know, at the Sandy Hook, you know, you're including those. And I don't know how you can just oversight that just by saying, well, it's only 2% of the, or 3% of the murders that happened. These are all, and the other interesting things are included here too. Mental health was mentioned. Those that need to be looked at in a separate, I guess, category, a different venue. But I don't think anyone here on the Yakima Reservation feels that they need a 30-round gun to go and harvest one animal for their, you know, for their people to eat. You know, I don't see the all we're talk. I think all that's been talked about is that specifically. I think the NRA people, they're saying, oh, once they start, you know, banning all these guns, they're going to ban all guns, you know, which is, you know, far from the case because it's, like you said, it's a constitutional right. And I think it, you know, only, you know, common sense is that you have to look at it in a common sense way and say, hey, wait a minute now. I don't, my kid goes to a public school. He's a Native American. He has sovereign rights, but he goes to a public school where he's open to, such attacks, whether there's a armed guard there or not. And I think it's important that this be addressed and looked at for what it causes, not what it's taking away. It's causing families to mourn. It's causing this. And I think it's disheartening to hear people say, well, don't take my rights away.
Right. Ron, right. Ron, I think you got a call. Thanks for your call there in Toppenish, Washington, tuned in on KYNR. And Vince, you know, Ron brings up something, a good thought to think about. And when it does come to our own tribal communities, of course, this is a national debate. A lot of people say it's an international debate. But, you know, we're focusing on our tribal communities a lot with our programming, what we're doing. So when it does come to our own tribal community, you know, who are we protecting ourselves for that we would need these type of weapons? Is it our neighbor? Is it the government? What do you think, Vince?
You know, I just have to go back to that sense of tribal sovereignty and identity. And again, I just have to stress, I think that firearms are a very small part of that. But a sovereign people needs to be able to defend themselves. And the way we have traditionally always defended ourselves is through volunteer warriors who are socialized by their families. As to who we're defending ourselves against, right now, I don't know. We were violently subdued. So at this point, we live in the heart of the empire. There's not a whole lot of violence going on around here in the U.S. right now. That's all occurring on the other side of the world as imperialism expands. So we don't have anyone shooting at us right now, but I think that a lot of our tribes feel like we're going to outlast the U.S. empire. And, you know, that's how I feel. And if we're going to do that, we need strong communities. We will need our own weapons as well. But again, that's just a small part of the puzzle.
Okay. And Vince, with that said, do you think that our history will make us more of a target, that will be one of the places where they make sure this is enforced? A final thought on that.
Well, you know, I think we have a history of that behind us. I know that most Natives I know own a rifle. I think that, you know, there's been activism in the past that indicates that we are prepared to have armed occupations or do those sort of things. So, yes, I believe that we have been and will continue to be targeted.
Okay. Thank you very much, Vince Reinhardt, for joining us today. And I also want to thank all of our callers. Phone lines have been blowing up, and we want to go ahead and direct you to our Facebook page where you can continue to make comments on this topic. Just check out Native America Calling on Facebook. And again, big thanks to Vince Reinhardt for joining us today on this program. And of course, you can also learn more about us at NativeAmericaCalling.com. And we also have a Twitter page, but we want to hear more comments, so hit us up on the Facebook. Thanks for joining us today here on Native America Calling. Also want to thank our staff, our satellite associate producer, Monica Brain, our executive producer, Sarah Gustavus, our engineer, John Strader, also Will Kai, our associate producer, and all the folks with Kwanic Broadcast, Native Voice One, as well as National Native News, Miss Antonia Gonzalez. We do appreciate all the work you do. And a great week, folks. And we will be back on Monday to bring you more from this electronic talking circle. And you can also visit our website starting this afternoon so you can see what will be taking place next week. Just visit us, NativeAmericaCalling.com. I'm Tara Gatewood.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.